Hi, my name is Ophélie, and you're listening to the Mama Activist Podcast, a podcast where we explore topics ranging from social justice, culture, politics, and news through deep conversation with myself, activists, humanitarians, and everyday people trying to make a difference. It's a space where we are willing to learn, grow, and be challenged collectively while highlighting activists doing amazing things in the world. From hearing new perspectives to learning new things, we are pushing for a better world, fighting for our liberation and reclaiming our power. So tune in and be a part of the movement. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Mama Activists. I'm back with my friend Dima. Hi Dima.
Hello.
So Dima and I, we met back in 2000, when was it? Like
2019, I think, right before COVID.
Yeah, right before COVID. We met in Greece and we were both working with the refugee population. So is actually, I'm very grateful that she's here with me having this conversation regarding this episode. And we are going to touch on a topic that is very important to myself, to my work, which is liberation. Dima, if you want to start by telling us a little bit about yourself for our listeners.
Sure. So I live in Brooklyn, New York. I work as an occupational therapist. And I primarily work with children in the school system, and I work with children in their homes with families. So a lot of the work that I do focuses actually on disability rights, on working on students' kind of ability to participate in their daily lives and working with families and parents on advocating for their children and their children's needs. So that's what my day-to-day looks like. And in my free time, I enjoy learning a lot about kind of different causes and social justice campaigns happening around the world. And then in a non-personal fun way, I just enjoy spending time with my dog and cooking and exploring and art and different things like that in New York.
And your dog is called Lulu, right?
Yes, she's sitting right next to me, so she'll be watching.
You're also a mom, you know?
Yes. I'm a dog mom, but she still gives me a lot of attitude. She's like a teenage girl.
I just want to bounce back on what you were saying and how you were explaining your work. And I remember hearing for the first time about your job when we were in Athens, and I didn't know that that was actually a thing. And I think that this is such an important job because, correct me if I'm wrong, and because I'm still kind of like figuring out what you do exactly. So you are an occupational therapist and you work with children who have disabilities.
Yes.
You're like helping them, you're helping them with their daily life, towards like having normal activities. But more like, I don't want to use the word normal, sorry, having like, kind of like occupying themselves during the day and working with the parents
towards yes.
Because sometimes parents don't necessarily know how to support their kids with disabilities.
Yeah, and it's a lot about working with, so you know, the field is called occupational therapy, and occupation is really defined as anything that's important to you in your personal life. And so for children, their occupation is play, it's school, it's things that are important for children to participate in. So when I'm in work, I'm looking at what's important for this child to be able to do, and what do they want to do? What do they need to be able to do to work through their day to day? And so it's a really unique and special job because everybody is able to have different goals. I could be working with 30 different children. They all have different disabilities. They all have different goals. They all have different motivations. And so all of that becomes a consideration. And how do I look at you as a person and figure out what do you want to do and how can I work with you to do that? And the same thing goes with when I'm working with parents. And those are primarily for really young children, you know, babies 1, 2, 3 years old, where they don't necessarily have the the skills yet to express, oh, this is what I want, this is what I need. So then it becomes a collaborative effort with parents. What's your goal for your child? How can we work together? And how do we do it in a way that's very strengths-based and very like affirming to the child without almost like imposing a lot of the social norms on the child, or imposing a lot of like what the adult wants or what I want?
What do you think they should be doing at that age or at that stage in their life?
Because it could be easy. Like the job could be very easy to turn into an area of control where I'm the therapist, I'm the, in quotes, professional, I'm going to tell you what to do. But that doesn't really create dialogue, and it doesn't create space for people to set goals for themselves and become the best version of themselves. It Absolutely. Allows them to be compliant and a version of themselves that either myself or their parent wants them to be.
You know, going back to like liberation, like me, an important part of liberation is there is that element of like being able to do what you want to do and what you're capable of doing. So I like the fact that you're mentioning this part of your job and how you're trying to do it in a way that is focused around the children that you're helping, and that is centering them rather than centering the like wants of the parents or what they think that they should be, their children should be doing, or like, you know, saying that, you know, you're not here neither to like give orders, but more like make space and like facilitate that, like that space, and work with the parents and the child to like kind of like make it happen, like whatever the child needs and wants.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think it's a beautiful job. Like literally the first time I heard about that job, it was when I met you in Athens. Before that, I didn't know it was a thing. And funny thing, because after I met you, I kept on meeting other people doing similar jobs in the way. So I was like, oh, okay. I wasn't paying attention before. But going back to the topic of liberation, I think that it's actually beautiful that we have that conversation, because we met at a time where, like, you know, we were working with people who kind of like had the opposite of that, you know, of like that sense of freedom, who were actually stuck in a city with no paper and no like kind of like no right to move, you know. And you mentioned that one of the things you like to do in your free time is like and look at like social justice causes and stuff like this. And also as a person, I think that you're really, I feel like you're kind of like liberated, or you're trying to be as liberated as possible, you know? And what does liberation mean to you what does liberation mean to you?
I thought a lot about this when you told me that we were going to talk about it. And that my first thing was, I just looked at the definition of liberation, and I thought a lot about the different ways that I connect to it. I mean, on a very personal level, I am a first generation American. I immigrated to America when I was a child. My parents fled war in Iraq. And when we came to America, as I was growing up, the Iraq war was happening, and the word liberation was being thrown around constantly. And I was so young, I didn't understand it. America was liberating Iraq. America was going in. There was a whole liberation act, you know, and I didn't really understand that. And I was an Iraqi girl growing up in a primarily white, upper middle class suburban town. And I was trying to navigate that. And I only think it was when I got much older that I started to understand what liberation would mean. And this idea that there's a colonizer and there's a colonized, it's always a dichotomy. Mm-hmm. And whether that's in a physical or a mental capacity, I started to kind of try to break down all the areas in my own life where I felt like my mind had been colonized, so to speak. You know, where was I rejecting who I was in my own identity to shape shift and fit into this world that I was existing in? And it really started with like the simplest things. It started with embracing having curly hair and wearing my curls. It started with choosing if or when I would remove my body hair. It started with setting the boundaries for if or when I would discuss my culture and do it in a way that was like explaining it to people or sharing it. I think there's a very big difference. So I think I started to just understand that it was kind of, as I got older, I could kind of deconstruct all these different social norms that had been put upon me because of where I grew up, and I could kind of be who I wanted to be and kind of liberate my own minds and say, no, I'm Iraqi. I grew up in America. I can choose who I want to be. I can be who I want to be without concern that there's like a higher social norm that.
Yeah, like you have to assimilate to that culture, like, you know, kind of like to be in denial of you. Like, I can relate to everything to a lot of the things that you said, and thank you for sharing. Like, I love the part where you mentioned your hair, because I think that personally, like, a big part of like me liberating myself, and, you know, I personally think that I'm not there still, like, I'm not 100% liberated, but I'm going there. For me, is a process, because, you know, I grew up in France. I'm also like the first generation of like children being born in France. My whole family, my mother and her brothers and sister, were all born in Africa. And there is like, I feel like my mind is still colonized to some extent. And traveling in Africa, I really realized how I still had to like decolonize my mind and like kind of like get rid of like all this internalized racism that is internalized growing up in like mostly white dominated area. But a big part of my liberation had to do with my hair. For so long, I kind of like, I was in denial. Like I internalized that like anti-black racism that sees like black hair as being like unprofessional, being like ugly. You know, I always like, when I grew up, I was always surrounded by all those white women, all the celebrities on TV all had like silky straight hair, so I always felt like something was wrong with my hair. So until my 20s, I kind of felt like I had to hide my hair. And it was so internalized that even in my relationship, I wouldn't let my partner see my real hair because of how much I disliked my hair. And it's not even like about disliking my hair. It was how much I disliked seeing my hair on myself. So seeing hair on other people, I would be like, oh, okay, it's okay. But seeing my hair on myself, I would be like, no, something is wrong. Like, my hair shouldn't be like this. They should be straight. They should look like this. They should look big, you know? And it's sad because it's really me being like, me oppressing myself.
Yeah.
It's literally me oppressing myself, me living with like disliking a part of me. And it wasn't even, I didn't dislike it because of myself. I disliked it because I was conditioned to think like this, you know, because of all that hate toward blackness.
Yeah.
So for me, a big part of my liberation was getting rid of my braids, you know, like actually like working with myself towards being comfortable with my real hair, not always having to hide my hair, to damage my hair, to strengthen my hair because I think something is wrong with my hair, and accepting my hair for what they are, but also learning about my hair, how to look after them, how to take care of them.
Yes.
And yeah, accepting my hair for what they are.
Yeah.
And a journey of like emancipating myself from those beauty standards, from like these oppressive things that I was doing to myself and that the society in which I was living was doing to me, was like, I felt free. I feel free now.
Yeah. You know? And like, I want to go back to what you said too about how the ability to embrace your hair then gave you the opportunity to learn how to care for your hair. And I connect with that deeply. Like, there is a journey in knowing that you can now actually actively, instead of using the energy to bring yourself down, you can actively bring yourself up. You can care for yourself. You can care for your body. You can care for your being, like your mind, your body, all that. And it's beautiful to be like, now I'm actually going to put effort into loving myself and loving components of myself that I can't change. And I had that same process of like, what products will serve me? How will I care for my hair or my body? Or what will I do that allows me to take up space in this world in a way that feels like authentic to myself?
Yeah, and in a way that is healing and caring to yourself, not that is diminishing you or like, you know, making you assimilate to something else, or like, but it's just like painful for you, you know, because me hiding my hair all the time, like there was time where I would leave my hair in braid for like 6 months straight because I was mostly surrounded by white people and I could not bear the idea of taking my hair out in front of them. So I was like, let me just leave my hair in braid. But that's actually damaging to me, you know. It's actually painful for my ages. So it was like me harming myself, assimilate with a culture, being in denial of myself to the point where I was hurting myself. And this is like, you know, talking about liberation, this is the opposite of like,
yes,
liberated and being free. And yeah, I love what you highlighted as well, the fact that, you know, you embracing your hair also means that you learn to look after your hair, and it's actually healing. For me, part of like liberation, like there is a huge aspect of like having to heal yourself from all the trauma, from all the generational trauma, from all the collective trauma. Like, unless we also go on that path of like healing ourselves from the harm that was done to us as a woman of color living in a white dominated society, then we will not really be free, because we are still carrying wounds that like are still hurting us. And you know, when you are hurt, even if you don't realize it, sometimes you do act from that place of hurt. And it doesn't really serve you or anyone else. So healing is also being in, like, is very important for me when it comes to liberation. And it's healing to be able to like wear my hair like this.
Yeah.
I haven't wear braid for like at least 6 months. And I've been having all these different like hairstyle, but with my real hair. And this is also the beauty of like traveling to Africa and being in like a place where I can relate with the people around me. I can identify with the people around me. I can like literally look at people around me and being like, yeah, I see myself in you, you know?
Yeah.
There is that beauty of like learning way much more, feeling comfortable and like having people that can show you how to look after your hair. Because, you know, growing up in France, even though I tried to learn at some point, I didn't really know better. So it wasn't until I got to Africa that I really learned how much I could do with my hair. And it's been beautiful. And now I'm raising my daughter with this, you know, so she won't have that kind of like self-hatred towards her hair that a lot of Black women and women of color, I feel, experience to some point up in like the West.
Yeah. And I think it's beautiful that you went to Africa, because you were able, you know, again, like when I brought up liberation, I talked a little bit about like the colonizer and the colonized, whether it's a physical or mental, emotional. And to leave, you know, France or the UK or an area like that and go into Africa, where you're in the space where that dynamic can feel smaller because you're seeing more people that you connect with or that you align with, you can actually take up the space that you want to and you need to and you are having to in order to go through your liberation process. So it's really, it's beautiful to be in that safe space where you're just around others who are existing in the same way. That's really, really nice that you had that.
Well, it's funny as you say this, because even though it felt amazing to be in a space where, you know, people look like me for the first time in my life and not being like the only Black person of a space. Well, there is, in terms of like liberation, and me, I advocate for Black liberation. Going to Africa, being surrounded by Black people did give me like space to be myself more. But, you know, there is this element in Africa, and you know, Africa, like, they are the colonized, unfortunately.
Yes.
And the way that the media works is so bad, you know, the way that information is controlled there. So there is that internalized racism. I found it there as well, but in a different way. And that is like idea that whiteness equal like better opportunities, better things, like is also kind of there. So it was a bit confusing for me because it's two different experience, like experiencing racism in the West and experiencing racism in Africa.
Yeah.
But there is that thing there is to do with like white supremacy, that idea that whiteness is better, that anything close to whiteness is good, is still there as well, you know. They still think that white people are super nice and that they should look like white people, to the extent where some people are even rejecting themselves and their land. Like, you have lots of people where I was who are like, oh, we don't want to be there, we want to go to America, we want to go to France and stuff. But there was that element where I felt better because I had people around me that look like me. But in terms of like my liberation, I felt like there was much more work to be done being there and knowing how people think that white people are. Some people there have really no idea of like, also because if you think about like education and how Western education is dominating the developing countries as well. So there is like that propaganda and that conditioning. People like conditioned to think that white people are good, white people are better. So it was like, like going to Africa, I just feel like in terms of like my advocacy for Black liberation, there is more to be done.
Do you feel like liberation and then our ability to find and connect with our own identities? I mean, how do you feel like that played? I know I'm asking you the question now, but I'm intrigued.
Please do.
I mean, I've never been to Iraq. You know, there's been a war. There's a lot of challenges that have stopped me from being able to go, and I still want to go. But I would imagine that if I went, I would struggle as well, because I would be somewhere in between. I don't know. I wouldn't be Iraqi enough. I'm not American enough. I'm somewhere in between, trying to navigate how to take up space in this world while also honoring myself, my culture, my beliefs, you know, all those things that come together. So I would imagine something similar happened with you when you were in Africa as well, where you have an image of what it's like, but then you go and you experience it and you're trying to figure yourself out and understand where you fit in the context of this world and how you want to take up space. So I'm just curious, like how that worked in terms of like, to, you know, that liberation for your mind and for yourself, but then also like coming to and you, as you were forming your own identity of who you wanted to be and who you are.
That's a really good question, actually. And I think for me, it was a bit challenging. Like at first, it felt very comfortable, you know, being there, being around people that look like me. But then, yeah, there was that element of like me not actually, like I wasn't born there, you know, I was born in France. And then you will see kind of like people treating me as some like differently because of me being attached to the West. And so at some point, I even had to like, I wouldn't tell people I was born in France. I would always just tell people where I originated from. Like, it's actually a hard question. And I'm actually glad you're asking me that question, because I didn't really think about, like, I struggled, but at the same time, I didn't struggle, you know?
I think, I would, yeah.
Yeah, I think my main struggle was to do with, like, when I would tell people I was from France, and then their behavior towards me would change. But then when I would say I was actually from the Central African Republic, people would actually treat me as if I was African. But then seeing how people, like, I guess, yeah, it's a hard question, because seeing how people were acting towards the idea of like the West, or what they internalize the West represented, and me going coming from there and knowing that it's not quite what they think.
Yes,
yeah, it was like kind of like a separation, you know, like, because I had a different understanding of the West.
Yes.
And I think in terms of like where I fit there, this is when I struggled, you know, because mostly everybody had that idea that the West was better. And so I found that when I was there, I was feeling more comfortable when I was with people from the diaspora. So people who came, who also were aware of like the way that the West work, but were also Black, and also came back from like the West to Africa. I don't know if I is answering your question.
No, I think it is, because I mean, you already said this, but Africa was the colonized. So you're now trying to go, you know, understand liberation, what it means to you. And you're doing it within a place where everyone's mind is also colonized. So they have this perspective, and you're trying to break out of the perspective within a space where that's the primary belief. So it creates those challenges for you of like, how do I navigate this? So it makes sense that.
Where do I fit? Yeah. Like, a lot of time I had conversation with people trying to explain to them how the West is not what they think. Because I was born there and I had more privilege than them, they wouldn't understand why I, as a Black person, I would be like, oh, you shouldn't go there, where the money obviously is. And, you know, then I tried to explain to them, like, all about systemic racism, about how, you know, how things work. And I found that a lot of time people really, it's like they wouldn't really believe me because of like, and for me, a lot of it has to do with education, with Western education, and the ways that, you know, like through colonization, through slavery, African institutions were colonized, so was education. So Western education is dominating African countries. So in school, you have like, they're all teaching about, they're teaching about Western education, which is an education that centers the West, and that kind of like teaches you about Western values over your own values. And the things that happen through that is that there is like a rejection of like their own culture. Like, as an example, a lot of school in Africa require children to speak English if you're like in a old English colony, and French if you're in a French colony, and they don't want you to speak your own language in school. And so among the population, you will see a lot of people who are not able to speak English or French, and those are the people who didn't go to school. And then the people who go to school, they'll just be speaking English. And then they'll be like, oh, it's because we are educated. But are you educated? Or are you also kind of like following Western education? Trying to like fit into like this Western narrative and kind of like rejecting your own culture.
There's a lot of when I was in school, I studied deaf studies. It was my minor, and we talk a lot about like cultural genocide and what happens when we take on other beliefs that and we push away who we are. So that idea of like the language not being taught, or like even things like you know, in the context of my studying, it was deaf people who were being given cochlear implants without a say. You know, they were a child, they were deaf, and they became hearing, and that they consider that a genocide to the deaf people because they were eradicating that culture of deafness and getting rid of things that are important in your culture, like language, communication, food, clothing, traditions, rituals, all those things. And we water them down, and it's challenging to see. And I mean, I didn't know that they were teaching Western education in Africa, and that's very interesting to hear, because yeah, now you're creating this strata within the community of English speakers, French speakers. Where is your colony? Like, what language do you speak? It's
exactly. So, you know, they have that idea that the West is better, because also they associate being educated with the West, with speaking like English or colonizer languages. So me coming from the colonizer's land to the colonized land, speaking the colonizer's language and not speaking the colonized language, and being like, you shouldn't go to the colonizers, you know, even though in their head, because of like through education, they learned that all this world was better. And not only through education, through religion as well. This is that for like a lot of time, and it's not only when I was in Africa, also when I was working with Black communities on the island in refugee camp, a lot of time I had people telling me like, yeah, you're coming with like your European mindset, without them understanding that actually me understanding that European mindset, I was trying to liberate myself from it.
Yeah.
And learn other ways. So me being in Africa, I had this challenge a lot, but also I had to do a lot of unlearning about the ways that I was brought up.
Yeah.
And now I'm in a place where I'm trying to do some relearning, understanding also that people in Africa were also conditioned to think that whiteness is better, and finding spaces where spaces that are not dominated with whiteness, even in Africa, you know, and there are spaces like this.
Yeah.
I just have to like find the correct, the right communities.
Yeah.
And I have found a couple, but I think that, yeah, in terms of like my identity and how I felt I fitted, I felt like, for me to like, I felt like I had to just get out of my Western side,
yeah,
you know, and find people who did not let themselves like indoctrinate into that Western, like all this Western bullshit.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's very hard. I think the process of learning and unlearning is very messy. It's not linear. Like, exactly. Some days I feel like, wow, I'm honoring myself and my culture and all these things. And then the next day someone will say something and I'll realize like, oh, like I was out with some friends and one of them speaks Arabic. And he was like, you know, when are we going to finally have a full conversation in Arabic? And I was like, I'm not having that with you anytime soon, because it was really interesting. And I had to think about that a lot, because I'm like, well, I'm Iraqi. My language is, you know, that was the first language that I learned, but my primary language is English. I live in America. I work in New York. Like, everything I'm speaking is English. So as part of that process for myself, like, I now primarily try to work with new immigrant Arabic speaking families, because I have the language. I want to use language. It's a part of who I am. But it's very scary to use it. I feel like I have to unlearn that. Unlearn that when I was younger, my grandfather used to say, don't speak Arabic in public. People won't, you know, people won't like that, or hide who you are. So even in a safe space, it's very hard to act on what I know I want to unlearn, that fear, that judgment, and to lean into it and act on it. So there's a lot of challenges in navigating that and owning who you are.
It's not a linear process, like you say.
No,
it's not
at all.
Yeah.
It's very up and down, and accepting, and then feeling frustrated with yourself or frustrated with society and trying to. Yeah.
And you know, when you get frustrated with yourself, you have to show compassion to yourself as well.
Yeah.
Like, be like, understand that, you know, like for our whole life growing up in the West, we were conditioned. We internalize something, so it's not going to take like 2 days to like unlearn all those things and to like free ourselves from all this conditioning.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I mean, I sometimes wonder, like, again, I do have like a therapeutic background, but in terms of like identity development and psychology needs and all that, like, takes a long time to get to that point of like self-awareness and self-actualization and understanding, like, I am now like liberated, so to speak. I feel like it's just like a process and something that my whole life for me personally, I'm going to keep working towards.
Exactly.
But I don't know if there's like a liberation state, if that makes sense. What I was saying is I feel like liberation is this like final stage, and it's this place that I don't know that I'll ever reach, but I will always strive to work towards. Feels like kind of like that self-actualization and understanding who I am and my needs and desires and, you know, all those things. And I think liberation is just one of the biggest parts of that process. And I was thinking a lot about the idea, because there's like this whole section of psychology called liberation psychology, and it's about how you liberate your mind. And it pulls from ideas of like social justice and radical healing and understanding like who we are and what our personal wounds are in the context of, you know, the trauma and the oppression that occurs socially. And we work for it. I mean, we want to. I know you and I want this, of like this notion where there is no dichotomy between the colonizer and the colonized, and we all kind of coexist and everything intermingles, and it's just, you know, like this utopia. But it's not really possible. We're always going to exist in this world where there is a push and a pull. So how do we...
But knowing this, do you really think that there is no liberation possible, even though it would be like a perfect liberation? You know, even kind of like walking towards your liberation and knowing that you can walk towards that liberation,
yeah,
is liberating in a way.
Yes, I 100% agree. And I think that it's so valuable for an individual to work towards their liberation, because, not to sound cliche, but it's like the collective of all the individuals working to liberate themselves will create communities where liberation exists. And it's almost, you already said this, it's working from within and bringing it out. Like, if I'm working towards liberation and you're doing it and everyone around us is working to create that space, we have now created a community within ourselves where we accept and we listen and we take up space. And I know I've said that like 100 times, but we're existing in a community of liberated minds, or working towards existing in that.
Exactly. So, and for the generation, like the next generation that will come into that space, even if we won't have like finished our process of liberation, we live in a liberated space, or in a space that is liberating, you know?
Yeah. So, and that must be important for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, as a mother, for you, I would imagine that's so valuable. And I've spoken to some friends, you know, I have one friend who is Chinese, and she was adopted and raised in my town, my best friend. She just had her first blood relative, her daughter, and she's been navigating a similar thing. How do I raise my Chinese American daughter in this world to exist and love who she is in this predominantly white area? And she's doing, you know, everyone's working through this process of how do we understand who we are and free ourselves and our minds. And it's the same idea. We do it for ourselves. We pass it down to other generations. We try to break that cycle. I think it's really beautiful to know that we're doing that. It's very hopeful to know that that exists.
Yeah. I think so too. And I think, you know, saying that is also kind of an utopia, like, but like what that finished liberation would look like. I also agree to some extent, but I think that we can still reach a liberated place. And that place also makes space for like us not fully being liberated, and knowing this, knowing where we come from, but still making space for us to be imperfect, I guess, you know, and to recognize that if we are there now and we are struggling with like not being 100% free, is because of our society and the way that things work, the way that this world works.
Yeah.
Us creating those liberated spaces, our spaces where you have people who are working toward their liberation coming together, like you are saying, this is liberating.
Yeah.
even though we won't reach, like, it will always be a process of us unlearning and relearning. I think that being in the process for me is liberating. Because you understand, you know that, you know, you're coming from like an oppressive system and you're trying to like reclaim your power, reclaim your space, reclaim your identity. And it's like, it's not a linear process, like you said. And there is not, there's like no finish line. But knowing that you understand where you come from and you want to get away from that, this is liberating. You know, it's like knowing you are oppressed, knowing you're like kind of like in prison and going out of your prison, not knowing exactly where you are going to settle, where you are going to end up, but going away from that prison and, you know, like enjoying the journey.
Yeah,
you're getting away from that prison and, you know, finding settlement on the way, but not really knowing where you're supposed to end up. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to find like a metaphor, like put pictures in it. But I think for me, the process is liberating. You know, it's like going back to like my hair.
Yeah.
Like the first time that I felt comfortable taking my hairs out, you know, it was, I remember I was in this huge warehouse in London. It was like 12 of us, so I had like a lot of housemates, and it was only two person of color amongst like all the people, and I had three of my housemates helping me taking my braids out. And I didn't stay out like with my hair out for a long time. I get the next day, actually, I braided my hair again. But having my friends helping me and spending the evening with all of my housemates with no braids, that moment, I felt so liberated.
Yeah, I just got chills. Yeah, it's true.
And it was super hard as well. You know, it was super hard.
Yeah.
But I was like, I have to do that for myself. And not only was it healing, but I felt super liberated. And it's like, it's not, it wasn't the finishing line, because obviously I had so much work to do after this and I'm still doing that work. But in that moment, you know, it wasn't just an idea. Like, I felt liberated.
Yeah. That's, I mean, you just hit the nail on the head, right? Like, it's meaningful, personally meaningful actions that help kind of just undo those, so to speak, like the metaphorical chains, that mindset, that cage that you're put in. Like, you have given yourself a step towards that, like, freedom of your mind.
Yeah.
It's, your hair is just kind of one part of that process.
Exactly.
And
it's like, you know, when people talk about healing, healing is like, you're not healed neither. You will never fully be healed, but you can walk towards that healing. You can have like healing practices. So practices that will make you feel like you're healing. And this is what you want, is having those healing practices that will help you through your journey, through like you journeying through life. So maybe instead of like thinking that we can be fully liberated, maybe we should have like liberating practices.
Yeah.
You know, things that we do that makes us feel that feeling of like being liberated, and that will help us in our daily life navigating this world. Because, like, you know, like, as much as, like, for me, being liberated will also mean like abolishing this world, like the way that things work. And like, I know that while I'm alive, it will never happen. But I believe that I can have those like liberating, like liberated practices that will help me feel free.
Yeah.
And still navigate living in a world that oppresses people.
Yeah. And like, I think that I agree with you, because I mean, I know that in our lifetime, we're not going, you know, there's not going to be a dramatic shift, but within our network and our circle, we can create that space for it. And I do, I mean, it might be a bit optimistic, but I do believe there's a domino effect. I believe that if you create it for yourself, and then you create it for your friends and your peers, and you're all
Are you still here?
I'm still here. You froze
Yes.
For a moment, so I don't know if you
you
said
froze
anything.
As well, it's my connection. Isolate, by the way.
I know, she's so beautiful. Hello.
Hi.
She's so cute.
What were you saying before the connection interrupted?
I was saying that I agreed with you, that I knew that. I know that we're not going to exist in a society where like everything crumbles and we restart and we create the space, but in existing and honoring ourselves and then the people around us and then encouraging others to also go on through that practice. You know, in the context of my job, I work with children who have disabilities and we live in an ableist world. And there's a lot of work that I do that revolves around self-advocacy and having children feel confident to say, no, I need this. It might not be the social norm that you're used to, but in my world, for my body and for my mind, this is what I need. This is what serves me. And teaching that to children is also so empowering because if one child can exist in that way, other children will see it. That will create the space that will shift the culture in the school. Like it's very small, but it's very important regardless of the scale, you know, like even if we can't change the whole world, we can change our circles. And that's still important because that's still a few lives that are being impacted. And I think it's important. And I think it brings me back to like the idea of like liberation psychology, where it's a twofold thing where you have to validate those traumatic experiences, but people can still be active participants in their healing and active participants in the journey. Just because we've experienced an oppression or a trauma doesn't mean we can't come back from that and we can't heal ourselves and move forward in that liberation. It doesn't make us helpless. It just makes us having more reason to want to undo those things that have happened. So yeah, I totally agree with you.
Yeah. I love what you just said because it's true that, yeah, even though we cannot change the world, we can change like the thing around us and we can, you know, we can embody that change and inspire people to do the same. And this is also liberation. It's
Yeah.
Also like reclaiming your space as an individual, reclaiming your power, standing for yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, finally being able to like have your need answered, but for who you are, not for like what people or like society expect you to do or to act like because you fit in this particular category
Yeah.
or box, you know?
Yeah. And it even you speaking now, I'm like, it doesn't also minimize the idea that our identity is multiple parts. Like I identify as a woman, I identify as an Iraqi woman, and like I am a straight woman, or I'm queer, or I'm, you know, disabled or able-bodied, like whatever the intersections of my identity are also make me. So,
and
you
having
know,
this, you know, this freedom of like having an intersectional identity is also liberating. Not
yeah.
having to just be like a straight woman, that's it. You know, you being an Iraqi woman, this, whatever you choose
Yeah.
to identify as, and having that freedom to identify as is also liberating because if we talk about liberation and like liberation in terms of like gender, sexual identity in some countries is not like is the opposite still. Like if you look at the laws that Uganda just passed criminalizing queer people, you know, and then having that freedom of like identifying as a part of being as part of the LGBT community in like the West is also a free like is a privilege and is also being more liberated, being more liberated, having that freedom of like expressing yourself
yeah
as who you truly are, and is also liberating.
yeah I mean, even in America now, like there is so much discussion about trans rights and different states are taking them away. And I mean, that's another example of a colonized mind, the idea that this, like, you know, religion and this Catholic practice or this fear of the unknown, this fear of what different gender identities and the way that different self-expressions can look. I mean, people are very afraid of that openness. And so that's where a lot of the oppression comes in, where like, if I can't tolerate who you are and your differences, I need to just ignore them. And I need to stop you from embracing those differences or embracing who you are.
And how much of it comes from them oppressing themselves truly, without unconsciously, you know? Because they are not fully letting themselves be who they actually want to be. Then oppressing other people and telling them that they should be this or this.
Exactly. I mean, if you love yourself, if you're present in your own life, that's, you're not going to worry about other people. You're not going to worry about the way they express themselves and are present in their lives, because you're already doing that for yourself. And I think that there's, I mean, liberation, I think it always comes down to control. Who is controlling who, whether it's in a physical space or a mental, who has control, whose perspective is the most important, whose mind is going to be colonizing, who's going to be forcing their beliefs on someone else.
And it also comes down to like self-hate as well.
Yeah. You
know, like how much free are you allowing yourself to be?
Yeah.
You know? And then if you have power and then you're not letting yourself be free, or you're like being liberated, then you're just going to oppress people who have no power and who are yet trying like expressing themselves or like being liberated in certain aspects.
Yeah.
Anyway, I could continue this conversation for hours.
I know, I really could talk forever.
Yeah, I think it was a good topic, and also talking about it with you. And I feel like a lot of like, because you're an occupational therapist, so there is this therapist aspect, psychology aspect that you brought into the conversation, which I think was really interesting as well. So I learned a lot from that conversation.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Well, this was wonderful. I really enjoyed talking to you too and learning about your journey and your process. And I know we're going to keep talking because we're friends. So.
But and I really want to have more of this conversation with you, actually. I think for me, it was great. It was also healing to talk about liberation and to talk about my experience going to Africa and how I struggle also in terms of like where to fit.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. This was wonderful. I was saying the other day, I love talking about who I am and sharing it. I don't like when I have to talk to someone and explain who I am or compensate or have them understand. It feels good to talk freely and share in like a way that feels natural without added explanation. So this was very lovely. And I'm so glad I got to see Afra. She's so cute.
Say hi.
Hello.
Thank you for anyone who tuned in this episode. And I'll see you in the next episode, guys. Bye.
Bye.